The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
My name is Brian Sims. I am the state representative for Center City Philly. Thanks, Mom. You know, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm the state representative for Center City Philadelphia, and up until last year, I was the only openly LGBT member of our state legislature. I was joined by another Philadelphian, Malcolm Kenyatta, recently. But I know a thing or two about the power of being out in a place where it doesn't happen often. I was a college football player when I came out of the closet. And in my life, I wish I'd had people like Adam Rippon to look up to as the kind of heroes that we all know him to be. It's obvious that I am proud to be here tonight at the Free Library. You all know this. The library is dedicated to advancing literacy, guiding learning, and inspiring curiosity for all Philadelphians. From its award-winning author events to its drag story times, ow, from its Youth Poet Laureate program to its annual job fairs, a vital component of a robust and progressive democracy, the library is one of the most important civic institutions. So I want you all to please consider becoming a member or making a gift that'll help the library continue to do its critical work. I am so thrilled to welcome a very special Pennsylvanian to the library this evening, someone who needs no introduction, but I've already been doing it for about 20 seconds, so I'm gonna keep going. Adam Rippon, you all know him as a world-class, breathtakingly talented figure skater, an Olympic bronze medalist, and a winner of Dancing with the Stars. I'm sure if somebody asks nicely, he can demonstrate for us. he's somewhere back cursing me right now. Adam is also an outspoken advocate for the LGBTQQIAAP2QBQS2S communities, calling for inclusion in sports, media representation, politics, and everyday life. In 2018, his fearless championing of equality won him the Human Rights Campaign's Visibility Award. His new memoir, Beautiful on the Outside, chronicles his journey to the top in a story that is cheeky and hilarious as it is inspiring. Tonight, he'll be joined in conversation by longtime broadcaster and journalist, Tracy Matisak. Please join me in welcoming Adam Rippon and Tracy Matisak to the Free Library.
Well, welcome back.
Here we are. How are you guys?
Well, thank you all so much for being with us tonight. I don't know about you, but I'm super excited. And if you have not read Adam's book yet, it is hilarious. You will so enjoy it. And speaking of the book, let's start from the very beginning here. Adam, you know from the title that it's going to be a funny book, right? And just from the photo, how did you come up with the title?
Well, I'm going to just hold this. There we go. I wanted something that you would look at, even if you didn't, like, if you weren't looking for it, you would find it. And it would, like, find you. And I wanted something that had some obnoxious title and that had a stupid picture on it. And I did it. I, like...
And look how well it worked.
Yeah.
So it all started, your skating career, with a popcorn tin, mm-hmm. The Victorian lady on the popcorn tin.
Yeah, can you, like everyone else, yes.
So common. So tell us about that.
So you know those like popcorn tins that you can get at like CVS when you're like running late to something? And you're like, no, we thought of you, for real. And you're like, you love cheese and caramel and stuff. And this specific popcorn tin had like a Victorian woman in the 1800s, and for some reason at 5 years old I was like, I need to fucking be her. And I tried to be here, to no avail, but it was like what inspired me and what made me want to get on the ice was this like woman on a popcorn tin from CVS. Yeah.
So it all started with a simple popcorn tin. Mm-hmm. You know,
you don't seem fazed by that at all. You're like, that sounds like Simone Biles. It was like a Victorian woman doing a beam work, you know?
Doesn't every Olympic athlete start that way?
Absolutely, yeah. It's the, you know, if you don't learn your history, you're bound to repeat it, so.
And of course you have to have a muff.
Yes, it was the muff. It was like a lot of things. Like, I don't know why it was like she's wearing like a full-length coat. She's with her husband, or I don't know, she said it was her husband. And she had a muff, and it was like the muff, like in my mind that I had this like absolute vision in my mind that I was like, I am gonna have a long coat, of course. And, you know, I was too young for a husband, so no husband. And then a muff for sure.
Yeah. You can't do it without the muff. No. I remember actually having one of those at one point.
You had a muff? I've never met an actual person that owned a muff. Really?
I kid you not. I kid you not.
I hate you.
I thought you might. Well, Adam, your book is hilarious, and yet there are lots of serious parts. Mm. And as I was reading it, I thought to myself, you know, you present yourself on and off the ice with such confidence and such humor, and yet you write about really struggling with anxiety as a young child. What was that like?
Crippling. it wasn't great. I just like every day that I would go to school, I'd ask my mom to like read me a joke in a from a joke book, and my mom and my dad are here today, and yeah, don't clap for them though. Yeah. No, stop. Let's roast them. No, I mean, could you imagine? Yeah. They're like, don't do it. They're like, keep talking about your book. Oh yeah, my anxiety. Sorry, I forgot. I think like I always was super anxious about leaving home. I was always super anxious about going and doing anything. And I think that skating was the first time that I was doing something that I really loved and that I loved to do, and I would do anything to be a part of it and do it as often as I absolutely could. And so I was willing to like feel those moments of anxiety because I knew on the other end of that was something that I wanted to do. I mean, I didn't want to go to school, and I think that I just had this overwhelming anxiety, and it was skating that really helped me through it because I realized that those moments might be uncomfortable, but if you have those doubts, you can push through them and you can see, you know, you can live through those moments and you can push through them.
Yeah. Perfectionism was another struggle for you. Do you still struggle with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that like we all struggle with. You know, it's just, I remember like, I wanted to have perfect grades and I wanted to never make any mistakes when I was skating. And for a long time that held me back. And then finally, when I realized if I could just do my best and be my best, that I would always walk away and feel satisfied. I felt like if I wasn't perfect, then I had like failed somehow.
It was either or.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Want to go back to early in your skating career because you write about how you spent a lot of time here in the Philly area, Harrisburg, Hershey, and you even write about the Adams Mark Hotel. Do you guys remember the Adams Mark? Tell us a little
bit
about
your... my God. It was like our Waldorf Astoria, the Four Seasons of...
Yeah.
Crazy.
But you did spend a lot of time here in the area.
I did.
As a young skater.
I stayed at the Adams Mark because my mom would like price line a hotel, and it was the only one we could get for like $39 a night. Is that right? $41. Ballin'. And We would do that because I would skate one full day in Philadelphia with like a coach here that was in the area. And then I would spend the next day there. So I had like 2 days in a row where I'd be working with this woman like away from, you know, where I was from in Scranton.
Want to ask you, since you mentioned a skating coach, when you came to this area, you really kind of met your first, I guess, official skating coach. Mm-hmm. And you write quite a bit about her. And I would love for you to read us a little bit about Sophia, if that's all right. I have a passage marked here about when the two of you first met.
Okay.
If you wouldn't mind reading that. And I have it marked off there, if you can see
you do.
It.
Thank you so much. You have done this before. Her name was Sophia, and my mom called her to set up a time for us to meet. As soon as we walked into the rink, the skadium in Havertown, Pennsylvania, I could hear my heart beating faster in my chest. When my lesson was over, she approached my mom and said, "He's such a nice boy. It's too bad he's fat." My slight frame had been concealed by my Old Navy tech vest and crash pads I had shoved into my underwear before my lesson so that if I fell, I would be able to get up immediately without any pain so not to allow this Russian woman any sign of weakness. I would eventually learn that this is something all Russian coaches say, whether they think it's true or not. I think "you look heavy" translates directly to "how are you" in Russian. After each session, maybe that's the confusion we have with like Facebook and the election. Like it could be all that. We just don't know. After the session, she and my mother decided that Sophia would be my coach. 8 months into my skating career, and I had a championship under my belt, a real coach, a mother who worked at the rink and would drive me anywhere, and a whole host of families in the industry. The skating industry. I was finally being treated like the star I already was in my own mind.
Thank you. And you do talk about thinking of yourself as famous from the beginning.
Hell yeah. I remember there was like this one instance where I stole my mom's like self tanner. And my mom is like, "Why are you darker?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And I just always was like, "I'm different than all of my siblings." I'm like one of six kids. And like everyone else is like pasty, white, Irish, Catholic. And I'm like kind of yellow. And all of a sudden my mom's like, "Did you steal this?" And my dad's like, "No, you know, Adam, he can tan from like the light in the car." And I'm like, "Yeah, I can." So I think I always was like, you know, striving for perfection.
Mm-hmm, as it were. So Sophia ended up being something of a second mom to you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, she allowed you to move into her home. She taught you to drive with nearly disastrous results. Mm-hmm. But she also wielded shame like a very expensive weapon. Mm-hmm. And you write about that as well. And that's another passage that I'd love for you to read with for us, if you would.
Yes. Would love to. It was like we were friends rather than coach and skater at this point. I also think she kind of knew that she couldn't help me advance as a skater much more. When I wouldn't place well at a competition, she would say, "See? You need to go someplace else." But at the same time, she once charged me for shame. When I placed poorly at that last national championship we went to together, she charged my mom an extra $500 for her time there because of the shame of being associated with me as a skater. Don't you wish you could do that? Like, it was a real diva move. Before there was Barbara, Mariah, Celine, or Whitney, there was a Sophia. My mom said that was the final straw in our relationship. She paid the shame surcharge, but wasn't going to pay Sophia ever again. When my mom broke the news to Sophia, she said, "I don't think that's Adam's choice. I think it's your choice." Then my mom made me tell Sophia myself that we weren't going to be working together anymore. I was 17, and this was a person who I had known for 6 years and had been living with for three, a woman who almost killed me in her teal Nissan Altima more than once. It was one of the hardest things I had to do. We both cried because we knew it was going to be the last time we'd see each other for a while and that things would never go back to how they were. We hugged, and she gave me a duffel bag filled with all the little random things I left at her house. I cried the entire way home, but I knew I was doing the right thing. When I think of Sophia now, I think of someone who was my best friend, but also a huge bitch. I mean that as a compliment. I think of someone who was super creative and somebody who would say anything to get her way. As an aspiring diva, I am a huge fan, except when she was saying things to me in order to get her way.
Thank you. So on to your real mom, who is indeed sitting
here. Yeah, she's
here
never charged me for
tonight.
Shame.
So you're the oldest.
She probably should.
She never thought of it until so late
yeah.
at first. Right?
It was too late by then.
So as you mentioned, you're the oldest of six children, and somehow your parents were able to raise a large family, and yet your mom drove you all over the state to help you achieve your dreams of being a skater. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the sacrifices.
I mean, the things that my mom did were crazy and incredible. My mom did everything and anything she could to help me achieve my dream. And it was really hard, and I tried to prove to my mom that it was worth all of these sacrifices that she was making, because this is something that I loved to do and I wanted to do so badly. But my mom would go the extra mile for me, and she would go the extra mile for any one of her kids, and I think that's what makes my mom such an incredible person.
Yeah. And you know, those of us who are not, you may go ahead and applaud. Yes, indeed. You know, those of us who are not Olympic caliber athletes cannot appreciate the amount of time and effort and energy and absence that it requires to achieve what you've achieved. And in your case, you were gone so much that your youngest brother seemed to be kind of confused about who you actually were.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I was confused who I actually was for a long time. But I remember, so there was this one instance where my youngest sibling was at school and he had to draw his whole family. And he drew, every one of our siblings and didn't put me in the picture. And my mom was like, "Sawyer, I think you're missing somebody." And he goes, "Who?" And my mom's like, "What about Adam? He's not in the picture." And he's like, "Oh my God, Mom, Adam's the babysitter."
You know you're away from home a lot when.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and yet, in later years, there was a period where you were encouraged to kind of make a break from your mom and go it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that period of your life. It involved green apples.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And I remember at this point in my life, I was getting ready for the 2014 Olympics. And I was in my 20s, and I felt like I was really putting a lot of pressure on myself, because I felt like my mom and my family were sacrificing a lot for me to go after my dreams. And I felt like if I messed up, I had wasted their whole time, and I had wasted all of the energy that they had put in. And that felt like a lot of pressure for me. And I felt like I could handle making mistakes, and I could handle coming up short, because I would figure it out on my own to get through that situation. But I didn't want to put my family at a disadvantage because of a mistake or a decision that I made. I wanted it to be my responsibility. I wanted it to be my shit to deal with if I needed to deal with something. And so when I moved to California, I started just, I said, I'm going to take care of this on my own. And as I was getting everything together, I realized how much and how all the little things my mom helped me with that I needed to now figure out on my own. And I moved up to California, and I had an excellent coach who's the coach that I ended up going to the Olympics with. But this is maybe like 7 years ago. So 7 years ago, I moved to California, and I moved to this small town called Lake Arrowhead. I mean, I still told people it was like Los Angeles, like L.A., because it was like L.A. It was just Lake Arrowhead. They didn't need to know. And so I was living in L.A., and when I was up there, it just rolls off the tongue better. And so I was up there, and because it's this like vacation town in San Bernardino, there's no apartment or anything, so you have to like rent a house or rent a room from somebody who lives up there, and I couldn't find anything I could afford because I couldn't afford anything. I was like, is anything free? So my coach offered for me to live in his basement. And so I took him up on it because it was the best and only option that I had. And so with the money that I had made and was making, it all had to go right directly back into like my skating. So I needed to pay for the ice time, I needed to pay what I could to my coach, and I needed to pay for this like one gym. There's like one gym in Lake Arrowhead because they're not that worried about going to the gym. And it was in the hotel. So I had to join the hotel gym, and it was like $50 a month. And you know, when you have no money, you're like, $50? Like, that's a lot of money. And I didn't, at the end of that, have a lot of money to like buy groceries. But lucky me, at this gym, they had this big basket of like green apples, and they had Tazo tea. So I was poor as hell, but I was having like $5 tea that you can get at Starbucks.
That's not bad.
No, it's pretty glamorous. Yeah.
But that's what you ate, right? You ate a lot of green apples and drank.
I did, and like I was, you know, my throat like kind of swells up when I have an apple, so it was like.
So there was that.
Yeah, but I was really thin, so it worked out.
So there was a silver lining in it.
Yeah.
So, Adam, by the time that you skated in the Olympics, you were 28 years old, mm-hmm. which by figure skating standards is elderly. I mean, as young as you were, it's old in the figure skating world. And you write about two previous attempts to make the Olympic team and not making it and how really rough those years were for you on multiple levels. Why did you feel that it was important to write about those missed opportunities for the team, those very difficult years on the road to making the team?
I wanted to really write a lot about my failures. And I wanted to write a lot about the times where I felt like I came up short. Because to me, those were like real life-defining moments. They didn't make sense at the time because I felt like a loser. I felt like I had messed up. I had like missed an opportunity. But as I got older, I realized that because of those moments, you know, in those moments, I felt like I had nothing. But when you feel like you have nothing, you also have nothing to lose. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to be like, oh no, I'm going to have also no money again. Yeah, like it's kind of a freeing place to be, because if you have nothing to lose, you can go into any situation and be unafraid. And in those moments, I was like unafraid to go after what I wanted and do it in my own way. And I love those moments, and I love to share those moments, because I think so many times, like, we're so embarrassed about things that we've done, or we've come up short, and we don't want to come off as anything but strong, and like we have all of our shit together. But sometimes in the moments where we don't have our shit together, they push us to be way better than we thought we ever could.
Yeah. So during those years, you came out to friends and to family over a period of time, but there did come a moment when you decided that it was time to go public. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through that decision and what that meant to you at that time?
So while I was getting ready to try to qualify for the 2014 games, I was hearing, and all of a sudden, this, like, right before everybody is going to qualify and they're announcing a team, the Olympics are in Russia. And they don't have a great track record. And they came out with this anti-gay propaganda law, and nobody really knew what that meant, and we still don't. But I remember that the USOC said that they would stand behind us if we said anything, but they couldn't guarantee us our safety or what it meant. And so all of the athletes and people going, we didn't know if, like, we were putting ourselves or putting our teammates at risk. So it was something really, it felt dangerous to say. I wanted to say something, and then, you know, in the long run, I didn't make the team. It didn't really matter. But I thought about it a lot. I felt like it was, like, the first time in my life where, like, because of who I was, like, not because of what I've done or anything like that, like, I was being, I was seen as less than, or seen as somebody who was, broken. And I remember when I was, like, in the closet, and when I was unsure of, like, who I was and if I wanted to come out. I remember looking on YouTube and finding a bunch of different coming out videos and reading tons of articles and other people who shared their coming out experiences. And I felt like I really wanted to be in that group of people and share my experience too. Here's the, like, thing though. After I didn't make the Olympics because I wasn't in, like, the best shape. I wasn't in bad shape, but I just, I could have worked a lot harder. And so I told myself I wanted to come out, but I wanted to be in, like, the best shape of my life so I could be a really good representative of, like, my community. Because the last thing I wanted was, like, I'm gay. And then they're like, yeah, but you're also, like, kind of bad and a little fat. Like, choose one. And I was like, I need to get it together so I can be and really represent and myself and this community really well. And so I that was, like, my drive and my focus, and I focused on that. When I focused on that, I wasn't doing it for myself. I was doing it for, like, other people, and that was so much easier for me.
Yeah. And you chose to
I'm
do
a
it
giver,
through a magazine.
You know?
And you chose a magazine, right? Mm-hmm. Interview to make that announcement.
I decided that, like, you know, at this point, I wasn't a national champion. I wasn't an Olympian. It wasn't a big deal. But it was still important for me to share. So I was doing an interview, and I told the woman, her name was Amy Rosewater, and I said to Amy that I wanted to include of when I came out, because she was asking me about my career, and I wanted to include when I came out, because I felt like it was a pivotal moment in my career, because I felt like I started to own more of who I was every time I was out on the ice. And Amy said, okay. And I said, I just want it to just kind of be, like, tucked in this article. I don't need it to be a big thing because it's not a big thing to me, but it's an important moment that I want to share. So she did that, and, you know, the magazine was out for, like, 2 weeks before anybody said anything. It was just, like, a skating magazine that, like, if you're a ice skater, you get the magazine. So it's not like, you know, Perez Hilton was like, what? You know, nobody really noticed, and that was okay. I didn't do it for attention. I did it kind of to think of, like, that young 10-year-old kid who, when I first started skating, I felt uncomfortable in my own skin. I didn't know why, and I felt like this is for that little kid.
Yeah. So fast forward to the Olympics.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm so sweet.
It's a shame about you not having much personality.
I know.
All right, so fast forward to the Olympics and the news that Vice President Mike Pence is going to lead the U.S. delegation in the opening ceremonies. That did not sit well with you because of his positions on LGBTQ rights. You spoke up about that. Next thing you know, you get an invitation to have a conversation with Vice President Pence, and you declined. Take us back to that time and tell us, why did you decline the conversation, and what would you want him to know?
So I'll like take you there with me. And so I said that if I make the Olympic team, I want to have like the full experience. And to me, the full experience was being honest, being totally myself, treating every journalist that I was going to talk to like they were my friend, and just like have a really good time and enjoy it, and also be really well-trained and be a really good athlete at the same time. So I thought if I was ever asked anything that I would answer it honestly, because I can tell you so many times as an athlete, like, I would have a practice session, and I'd get off the ice, and I'd be in the locker room, and I'd be like, and then I'd be like, oh, shit, I have, like, a press call before, like, you know, a big competition. You have to do, like, a conference call with different journalists. So I'm like, okay, pull it together. And they're like, Adam, how is it going? And you're like, I don't think I've ever felt better in my entire life. I'm feeling stronger than ever, and I think I'm gonna win. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that anymore. So if I was asked, like, how are you feeling? I'm like, I'm training a lot, but I'm fucking nervous. And I wanted to do that with everything I did. And I was asked this, I knew I had this one interview, and it was like after I was done practicing, and I trained in Lakewood, California, which is like right outside Long Beach. Stunning place. It's not stunning. So I trained, it's like an old, like, what's a grocery store here? Like a Wegman, what's it like, a downsized, a bad Wegmans?
It's
oh my God. Acme? Mm-hmm. Acne. Which one is it? Acme.
Acme. Uh-huh. A-C-M-E.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Shit, I hope nobody from there is here. So it's like one of those that got turned into a rink. So that's so that's where I trained. So like I'm like dead serious that like one of the rinks, you know, you had to like go through like meat curtains. You know you're covering your mouth. I know what you know. The plastic curtains to get to the meat. The meat curtains. You know, you all know what I'm talking about. Grow up. And so I trained there, and like in this, there's like a Kohl's in the parking lot. There's a Taco Bell. And, you know, I'm doing this interview. I know I have this interview. It's with, like, Christine Brennan from USA Today. And it's after I'm done practicing. So I want to drive out of, like, the rink parking lot. But I don't want to be driving when I'm giving the interview because I just wanted to just, like, sit. And so I drive into the Taco Bell parking lot. So it's, like, me in the dark in a Taco Bell parking lot with the light pouring in. And Christine says, I just want you to know before we start this interview that, like, what you say now as someone going to the Olympics, your voice will be amplified in a way that it hasn't been before. And I said, yeah. And she said, okay, as long as you know that. And I said, Christine, let's do this. And so she asked me a bunch of questions. Are you ready? Are you excited? I said, yes, I'm excited. I'm ready. I'm feeling good. And then I knew what she was doing. She was just getting ready for the big show. And she asks me, what are my thoughts on Mike Pence going, leading the athlete delegation to the team for the 2018 Olympics? And I told her that I didn't think that he represented all of the athletes. He didn't represent the way that I grew up. He doesn't have the same values as I have. you know, because I don't believe in lying and cheating. And I thought that, you know what, I don't agree with that. And it was a quick interview in a Taco Bell parking lot. And then the next day, my phone like blew up. And I had calls from like US Olympic Committee, from US Figure Skating, my agent at the time. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do? I'm like trying to rack my brain. I'm like, did I say something about somebody? Did I talk shit? Did I say, I don't know. And then all of a sudden I call my agent back and he's like, the office of the vice president has reached out and they want to talk to you. This is like an hour or two after the article like went up. And you know, you grow up and you hear the president of the United States and you hear vice president of the United States and your first reaction is like, what an honor. Like, how incredible is this? Maybe this is like my opportunity to like make a difference or make a change. Like, this could be something really important. And I said, okay, I need to think about it. And I called everybody else back. It was all the same thing, that the office had tried to reach out to different, find me. Everyone wanted a piece. So I was thinking about it, and I realized that I had to take a step outside of like who I was and what was going on around me. And I was like, you know what? This isn't a phone call for me. I just said something. The vice president didn't know who the fuck I was 5 minutes ago. So why is he reaching out to me? Why has he not reached out to people in Indiana whose legislation has actually affected their lives? What he has done, I'm super lucky, has never affected me. That's not a conversation for me. It's for, you know, the black trans woman who doesn't feel comfortable walking down the street, who knows that she could be murdered before she's 35. It's for, you know, the young gay kid who gets kicked out of his house and that parent's decision is affirmed by things that he says and actions that he's taken. So it's not my conversation. And so I decided that I was going to call the media relations woman for US Figure Skating. And her name is Barb. And Barb was a lesbian. And was, is. Like, yeah. Yeah. Just for that, you know, one summer. it was wild. Barb is like, we were like, Barb. She was like, I know. You're like, you're married to a woman. So Barb is like an out woman with a wife. And I remember asking Barb, and she's like, you need to think about what you want to do. Like, you know that like we are going to support you no matter what. It is a really incredible opportunity that you have right now. And so I called her and I was like in Culver City. I don't know if you guys know like LA well, but I was in Culver City where my gym was. And so I'm in this alley in Culver City. Like, you know, so many great things are happening in a Taco Bell parking lot in an alley for me. Metaphor. And I called her. I'm like, hey, Barb, I've thought about what I want to do. And she's like, uh-huh. What are you going to do? And I'm like, Barb, you can call the office tomorrow and you can tell Mike Pence to fuck himself. And she's like, all right, well, I'm going to think of other words to say, but I'm really proud of you, kid, and I would do the same. Fuck him. And so I was like, okay, we're on the same page. And that was that, you know, that was that. Nobody, I was like, this is just going to go away. Nobody's going to know. It's, you know, I said my thing. The article's going to pass. But the woman who did it, Christine Brennan, God love her. She won't stop at anything to, like, get to the bottom of this. Because for her, she was, like, wet when she found out that somebody... Like somebody reached, somebody, like they found the article, the vice president's office. She was like, have you heard? I'm like, yeah, I heard. She's like, So we got to the Olympics. This is like weeks later. Also, I'm trying to train for the biggest moment of my life to that point. And I know you can't stop thinking about what I just said. I know I will. So I'm getting ready, you know, I have to focus on what I'm doing. And I get to the Olympics and there is Christine. She's like, I heard a rumor that you denied a phone call. Is that true or false? And so all of a sudden she says that, and there's only like two or three like journalists behind me. It's like at a practice or something. And I'm like, you know what? Ask anybody else because they'll know the answer. And she was like, all righty. And she did. And then all of a sudden it was everywhere that I had denied this phone call. And I didn't care, but it was a big deal. Yeah. And I didn't really mean for it to be a big deal.
Yeah. But sometimes it happens like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there go Taco Bell again. You never think. Yeah.
So at the Olympics, we all watched you put on the most dazzling performance on the ice, and for all the pressure that must bring, you seem to be enjoying every minute of it, that you were just absolutely in your element. And for those of us who will never have that moment, what is it like to glide out onto that Olympic ice and to finally achieve your dream?
It's surreal. I would say that 1 month in Korea, I never had such laser focus for 30 days in a row. I was so in my element every single day. Nothing could throw me off. And I think it was because I was so well-trained. I remember every practice I went into. And it was like one of the last ones before I was going to compete. I went on, I did everything, like all of my jumps within like 5 minutes, which is like not normal. I did like everything really quick. I went over to my coach and I was like, I'm done. And people are like sweating bullets and they're like, the Olympics are tomorrow. And I'm like, the Olympics are tomorrow. Like, I'm like, you aren't ready. And I was like, I'm so ready for this moment. And I would then go and I'd do an interview and I was like, so in the moment. When I went out, you know, it's funny because like you think of that moment a million times and it's just like every other moment you've ever had. Mm. It's no different. It's no more special. You know, you go and you compete in a big arena for a nationals or a world championships. It's like a sold out arena of like 10,000, 20,000 people, you know, like 10,000 or double that. really specific numbers. And when you're there at the Olympics, only half of the arena is sold out because the other half is all desks for all of the different media outlets. So in a way, it feels like the smallest crowd and feels weird. It feels almost like a practice session. On the other side of that, the Olympics is just made for people to enjoy watching at home. And I knew that right away when they said that, you know, you're competing at the biggest moment of your life, the biggest competition, you're at 10 a.m. And you're like, oh, okay. They're like, I know it sucks, but it'll be live in New York. And you're like, okay, well, this whole thing is just about the viewers at home watching. And I was like, okay, I get it. This is just, it's just a show. And I think that's why you see so many crazy performances happen, because it's the people who are so well prepared, who are just, they know they're going to win. They win because they know it. Or you have these, you know, crazy upsets because these people didn't put the same kind of pressure on themselves, so they can go out there and they can just nail it. Yeah. And that's why the Olympics brings out such crazy and incredible and emotional experiences. And so when I go out there, it's 10 a.m., I have to remind myself it's like not a practice session. I'm like, this is it. This is the moment. Like I remember like looking, because I started and was looking down at the ice, and I'm like, this is the moment you've waited for. And then I was like, okay, now shut the fuck up. And it's weird because the Olympics, it's like, you know, might be in this small arena, but you know that there's a camera and you know that like maybe like Britney Spears is watching and you're like, you're like, it's so, this is weird. And you're like, but I just have to do what I've always done. And so it feels exactly the same. Wow. It feels no different, but it's completely unlike anything you've ever done.
Before we open it up to our audience for your questions, can we just pause for just a moment and talk about you and Jenna on Dancing with the Stars? Can we just talk about that for a moment? Incredible. What was that experience like?
I mean, that was a lot of fun. Sometimes people are like, what was harder, going to the Olympics or doing Dancing with the Stars? And I was like, well, one was like 20 years of work, and one was 6 weeks. And they'll be like, yeah. So, it's the mirror ball, right? That's pretty cool. I'm like, yes. It is amazing, and it was so much fun. And I'm so glad I did it. It was like during this really crazy, you know, all of this like aftermath after the Olympics. And I was on tour with Stars and Ice at the same time. So I was, you know, just running around like crazy. But it was, I'm so glad I did. It was so much fun.
Yeah. You looked like you were having a ball. And congratulations.
Thank you.
So on that note, let's open it up for our audience for your questions for Adam. We have got some staff members who have microphones. So just raise your hands and we'll do our best to get in as many questions as we can before we have to go. Yes, right here.
Thank you. Hi, Adam.
Hi.
I must say, I finished reading your book, and I just have so much more, new appreciation for your mom, for Kelly. Hi, Kelly. For, besides being smart and kind, you seem to be so brave. And in the book, we hear about one of your children, and there's five more, which I'm sure you poured your heart and soul. So, yeah, I really appreciate, yeah.
My mom's like, oh, this is fucking awesome.
Sorry, Adam. So I did have a question.
Let's bring it back.
I know. Yes. So I had
a
question.
Yeah, she's had her moment, yeah.
I know. Okay,
everybody
all
loves
done, Kelly.
Kelly. Okay.
I had a question, but actually your book answered it, so forget about the question. But I just wanted to say, I'm a trauma chaplain in a very busy hospital, and often we have trauma after trauma after trauma after trauma, and sometimes even a chaplain needs a chaplain. And my daughter introduced me to you years ago, and so I've been following you. And, you know, during the Olympics and afterwards, and sometimes when it gets really hard at the ER and it's just heartbreaking, I go into the break room and I kind of look on YouTube and put my earbuds in and watch your channel, your YouTube channel, your Breaking the Ice, your Paula Abdul, and it kind of gives me a second wind to go out and do my job. So in the back of your head, you just know that you make a difference. And I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for telling me that.
That's great.
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
So I was really excited when you selected Let Me Think About It by Ida Kaur as your number for the Olympics. I can't think about that song without thinking about you, and it's such a fantastic song. Tell us a little bit, I mean, I regard that as a queer anthem. Tell us a little bit about your selection choice behind that song, and what did it mean to you for this huge moment of your life to choose that song for that particular moment?
So, like I said earlier, that I wanted to have these really like honest and authentic moments. And I knew that, like, the Olympics is this like one moment where you could do anything your entire career, but if you go to the Olympics and you like nail it, people are like, you always nailed it, didn't you? And you're like, yeah. And I was like, what? How do I want people to like remember me as a skater? Because these will be the programs that people will remember me as. And I wanted to, you know what, I knew, and I said this at the Olympics, I knew that I wasn't the best skater, but I knew that I was like the most fun. And I wanted people to be like, everybody else is really good, but like Adam was the most fun to watch. And I chose a song that was like one of my favorite songs. 2008 was a good year for music. And I always wanted to do it. And I brought it up to like one of my friends who did my choreography for me. And he was like, okay. And I never heard from him. And I was like, he's going to disown me as a friend. And he didn't, and he was all about it. And so I wanted to like showcase that side of me because I'm a fun person, and I wanted everyone at home to see that, and so that they would feel like they knew me as well. And so that's why I chose that song. Not for any other reason other than I felt like it would really help me to like show who I was the best.
So I was thinking you probably get a lot of tossies on the ice in your competitions. What is the best and or weirdest tossie you've ever gotten in a competition?
I'm gonna try to think hard for this one. But one time, like I was like 15, and one of the girls I skated with like threw her underwear on the ice, and she got in so much trouble. And I didn't want them, like, like, sorry, bitch, like, and then, like, nice things, sometimes there'll be these, like, very generous people who will, like, who have thrown, like, really nice things onto the ice, like a wallet or something, and you're like, it's empty, though. You'll fill it up. You got it. But I think like, nothing too crazy, nothing too weird. I got somebody threw their phone number, but they didn't like who say who they were. I'm like, I'm not calling.
You never know what they're gonna throw at you. Other questions? Yes.
Still today, yeah.
Yes.
So you talked to us a little bit about how when you're like 11 to 17, how you were at the ice rink a lot, like with your coach too, but what about school? Like, was it hard to balance between school and that? Were you ever homeschooled?
Yes, so because I was living away from home, my mom homeschooled me for like 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, which was a disaster. I was not a good student to her. She's like, did you get your work done? I'm like, yeah, lady. And I didn't get anything done. And then she's like, okay, we should really start like building your portfolio together, like get the whole school year together. And I'm like, I haven't started the year. Hey, that's the state of Pennsylvania's fault. I survived. But then when I was doing high school, I did it all online. So I was working with like a high school where like I had to turn in things on time. So I had to like get a formal education. So I was doing that all while I was practicing. And like, yes, it was tough. But like, it was the only way that I was able to like keep skating at the same time. So I made sure that I got it done, because if I didn't get things in on time, just like if I were at school, I wouldn't pass a class. And so, I just did it that way, but it was like more accountability when I was doing it online, which was like for the best.
More questions for Adam. Yes, ma'am.
So I want to tell you one thing and I want to ask you one thing.
Go for it.
So in 1998, I started the first website for gay skating issues, and I listed, because people kept saying, oh, you know, well, who's gay in skating? And I said, I will tell you. And they thought I was kidding.
Oh, wow,
right?
I really like you
and
already.
I said, you know, for $10.
$10. Well, I mean, in 1998, $10 was like being a millionaire.
Well, and it actually in 1998 wouldn't have gotten me very much money.
Right.
Because I had everybody listed if they were on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And then by 2006, I moved on, but I did keep an eye on the Olympics. And You know,
I'm fucking obsessed with you.
So,
keep going.
So 2018, I'm sitting with my two little gay daughters who have on their like green and blue mermaid makeup for your costume,
okay.
Right? And we're watching you. 20 years. Oh my God, it took 20 years. Thank you. Oh. And they thank you. And, you know, and they're like, and, you know, my then 13-year-old is like, I didn't know I could love anybody so much.
Oh, my God, what good taste.
So, so the thing I'm going to ask you, and before I ask you, I will tell you that you are probably the second white man that I will ever accept this from. What did you mean when you said you were a timid, beautiful, shy Asian girl? And yes, fair enough, yes. But what did you mean?
I think, you know, because I was talking about, well, first of all, thank you for accepting me to your community. Thank you. I feel embraced. So in what she's talking about, there's this like moment in my book where I had two girlfriends in my life. What? No. And one of them was this girl that I skated with who was from Korea. And I was saying in the book how we were perfect for each other because she was, you know, I think when you skate, you're so focused on like what you're doing and what you're trying to get done. That like you put a lot of like you like emotionally stint yourself in a lot of different situations. So she had never had a boyfriend before, and I had an ex already. And I remember that like I wasn't gonna do anything with her, and I thought for a really long time that the reason I wasn't gonna do anything was because I was just like a really good guy, and I was like I was raised Catholic, of course I'm not gonna do anything. I'm not a sinner. And in the book, and she was very, you know, she didn't have a lot of friends at the rink. She was very focused. She was a very good, very, very good skater, like the best in the world. And so she, you know, not a lot of people approached to be her friend. And, you know, we were both training and competing at the time, and we, like, confided in each other, and we found each other. And in the book, I said, you know, she was just this Thai. She's Korean. She was this shy, timid Asian girl. And I was like, and here I was, a perfect match for her, also a shy, timid Asian girl. And I just said it, like, tongue-in-cheek, that here we are, we're so similar. And we're both so like afraid of taking this next step forward and figuring out who we are. And we're both sort of like, you know, 19 and 20, but we're so the same. We're so just 13-year-olds trying to figure out like, how do we become normal people in this situation that is so not normal? And, you know, unfortunately, I will never be Asian. Thank you. I've tried, but...
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
So my question, I want to know what you think is the best thing and worst thing about being, like, a real celebrity. Not just a skating celebrity, because that's, like, different.
Okay. The media. And the best thing is the money. Honestly, I think the best thing is like one thing. I love social media because I feel like maybe I've never met most of you here tonight, but like I think because of like Instagram and Twitter and stuff, I kind of feel like once we all start talking, we're just friends. And I think that the best thing that I've ever had is that like I've connected with so many people and I've made a lot of friends through it. Yeah, such as, yeah.
Well, on that note,
what please... a great way for me to end it.
Please join me in thanking Adam Rippon.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here tonight. The book signing will be upstairs. We'll see you in a few minutes. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.